And now I will again introduce Patrick Neal, who is going to lead us in honoring our saints.
Gather with the saints by the river that flows by the throne of God? When I heard the chorister sing those words, I looked around to see if anybody felt passed out or just left. Saints, throne, God, all in 14 words. Don't you understand, Melanie? This is a Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We don't have saints, let alone thrones and gods. Yeah, but, well, I'm not going to argue about thrones and gods, but let's talk a little bit about saints. Do we have saints? Now, the Catholics include among their saints their martyrs. And we certainly have Unitarian Universalist martyrs. We're all familiar with Michael Servetus, who was burned at the stake by John Calvin. Ludwig Hetzer was killed in Germany for denying that Jesus was a god. Francis David died in prison, denying the Trinity. And Thomas Aikenhead was executed in England for the same offense. Norbert Capek was executed, the founder of the Czech Unitarian Church was murdered by the Nazis. In 1965, Viola Liuzzo and the Reverend James Reeb were murdered in Alabama while doing civil rights work at the call of Martin Luther King Jr. The Reverend Toribio Quimada, a Universalist and founder of the Universalist Church of the Philippines, was shot to death in 1988 for his social justice ministry. In 2008, Greg McKendry and Linda Krager were killed in a politically motivated shooting at the Knoxville Unitarian Universalist Church. And there have been many more. They are all certainly saints. And we light a candle in their memory for all of our saints. We also could think about heroes. We certainly have had a lot of heroes in the Unitarian Universalist Church. I'm thinking now about those two heroes that we saw very recently on a PBS special. The Reverend Wetzel Sharp and his wife Martha. They certainly deserve to be saints. So I'm going to light a second candle for all of the heroes of our faith, and there have been many. We can also talk about the founders of our faith. So the Universalists talk about people like Jose Ballou and John Murray, and among the Unitarians of our faith, we could talk about William Ellery Channing and Ralph Waldo Emerson and Theodore Parker. They all played a major role in who we are today and what we do today. And so I light yet another candle in honor of our founders. But many Unitarian theologians, and by the way, there really are Unitarian theologians, believe that sainthood is a much broader concept. The Reverend Craig Nowak argues that saints are ordinary people who happen to be extraordinarily human. The ordinary saints among us, Nowak continues, are profoundly human people who remind us that we are co-authors of life, whose choices determine the outcomes of our stories and ultimately the meaning of our lives. The ordinary saints possess a deep and abiding awareness of the interconnectedness of all life and acts accordingly. Ordinary saints, people whose very way of being in this world changes this world. They are all around us, giving us refuge from life's troubles with a kind word or a smile. They're the people that don't lose their temper when there's a new cashier. They're the people that pause to let us enter from a busy side street. They are strangers who show up at candlelight vigils to stand with the suffering. They're the person who takes the time to write a letter to Congress. They are people who suffer and celebrate with us as we co-author the story of the world with our own lives. They are people like you and me, whose minor choices beautify this world moment by moment, day by day, life by life. So how might we honor the ordinary saints in our own lives? This excerpt from an anonymous poem, I think, is a good place to begin. Remember me in your heart, your thoughts and your memories, of the times we loved, the times we cried, the times we fought, the times we laughed. For if you always think of me, I will never have gone. So today we want to recognize the ordinary saints in our lives, so that we remember in our hearts and our thoughts and our memories. And this year at WOOF, we lost two saints, two ordinary people who were extraordinarily human. Beth Elkin was active in our RE program. She always had a kind word, a smile, encouragement, even as her own life slipped away. But even in her death, her bequest to WOOF allowed us to build a new office for Rebecca Gammons, our Director of Religious Education. So we light a candle in Beth's memory. Truly a saint among us. Also this year, Jan Wesson left us. You all remember Jan, active on the board, member of many committees. He was our outreach to the Muslim and Quaker communities. I can see Jan now sitting down there on one of those pews, looking at his little notebook. And when we ask, "How are you today?" Jan would always be saying, "Almost perfect." So we light yet another candle for Jan. Goes on mute. As a child, one of my favorite days was Memorial Day. And back then, it was celebrated always on May 30th. That was only 3 days after my birthday, so the euphoria of new toys and new books occupied me. It was also a day I looked forward to because it meant spending time with family and friends. Memorial Day was the day we cleaned the graves in the old historic cemeteries in Coos County, where four generations of my family were buried. In the morning, we would load up the gardening tools, mounds of fresh flowers, a picnic lunch, and head off to meet other family. There were always weeds to be pulled, shrubs to be trimmed, a picnic lunch, There would be leaves and rakes and grass to rake, and eventually bouquets of flowers by the headstones. I understood that this was a solemn day, but it was also a happy day. Stories were told about the lives that these people had lived, what they liked and didn't like, what they looked like, what kinds of people they were. People would talk to the graves as if the person buried there was involved in the conversation. We would sit together and enjoy a picnic, remembering times we had enjoyed sharing a meal with these very same people. There were tears and laughter, but a sense of a much larger family. For my family, May 30 was our day of remembrance, our day of the dead, our All Saints Day. And many of the stories that I heard as a youth remain with me 60-plus years later as I visit those same cemeteries, do the same work, bring flowers, I talk to those graves, I cry and I laugh, and I understand that I carry parts of each of them not only in my DNA, but in who I am as a person. The tradition of honoring and celebrating the deceased is a part of cultures all around the world. Each August, the Japanese Buddhists in our community gather at the Japanese Garden for the celebration of Obon. Obon is one of the three major holidays in Japan. It is believed that During Obon, the ancestors' spirits return to this world in order to visit their relatives. Traditionally, lanterns are hung in front of houses to guide the ancestors' spirits. Obon dances are performed, graves are visited, and food offerings are made at house altars and temples. At our Japanese garden, tea candles are lighted to honor the recently departed, and the candles are floated in tiny paper boats out onto the pond to guide the spirits back to their world. In China, the seventh month on the Chinese calendar is called Ghost Month, a time in which ghosts and spirits come out from the underworld to visit Earth. The ninth day of the ninth month in China, what's called the Double Ninth Festival, is a time to tend the graves of the departed ones. Dia de Muertos, Day of the Dead, a multi-day Mexican holiday that spread throughout the Americas. It focuses on gatherings of family and friends to pray and remember those who have died and support their spiritual journey. It also includes festivals and parades. Our Hispanic neighbors here in Oregon will be celebrating Dia de Muertos over the next 3 days. Throughout Europe, the end of the harvest season was associated with the time that spirits would return to the earth. The Celtic feast of Samhain celebrated the end of summer and the harvest. The Celts believed that on the eve of the Festival of the Dead, Halloween, the dead returned to walk the earth, and with them came powerful spirits of evil, witches and gremlins and goblins. Fires were lit to ward off the evil. There was dancing and noisy games and feasting on fruits and nuts from the recent harvest and drinking of herbal ales while waiting for the safety of the rising sun. According to some scholars, the Christian church absorbed some of the Celtic practice and created what's become known as All Hallows' Tide, or the Time of All Saints, which is the October 31st and November 2nd. All Hallows' Tide includes All Hallows' Eve. We've talked about that already. All Saints' Day, and then All Souls' Day. All Saints' Day was a time to honor saints and other folk who had made it to heaven. All Souls' Day was a time to honor those who resided in purgatory and were busy working out their sins so that they could go to heaven. Catholics and Anglicans and Greek Orthodox will continue their tradition of All Hallows' Tide beginning tomorrow night, and Protestant churches throughout America, around the world, are celebrating All Saints' Day either today or next Sunday. All of these festivals and celebrations and commemorations are about exploring the relationship between the living and the dead. And this exploration is a part of our Unitarian Universalist histories as well. You know, Universalists were the denomination that believed in universal salvation. Universalists believed that we were all saved at birth and we were all going to heaven at some point after we die. Unitarians were interested in exploring the Bible using reason to understand what happens to us after we die and to explore the nature of God. At least that was 19th century Unitarians. As UUs, we have no shared final understanding of what the relationship is between the dead and the living. We run the gamut from those who believe there is nothing to those who think we carry the memories of the dead with us as we live, to those who believe in heaven and reincarnation and so on. I wonder how many of us have had the experience of feeling the presence of one who has died. I know I have. How many of us have had dreams that seem so real where we had the opportunity to speak to our loved ones who have passed before us? I know I have. A few weeks ago, I was alone working on the RE office when I felt the presence of my mother reminding me not to work so hard and to take care of myself. It may be these thoughts were simply psychological coping skills, but on the nights of All Hallowtide, when so many cultures believe that the veil between the worlds thins, it can seem easier to believe that there is more, and that perhaps we might be able to glimpse it. If your dead ones were to come through your home tomorrow, what would you want to ask them? What would you want to tell them? What would you want to thank them for? You know, what really matters in these coming days is that we take some time to remember those who have gone before us. May we cherish those memories. May our lives be a reflection of the best of those who have gone before. When our path becomes hard, when we falter or lose our way, may we be strengthened by their wisdom. And when we grieve, may we remember we are in beloved community together, here in support of one another. In the words of Elizabeth Tarbox from our reading this morning, get silly and laugh loudly with your grandchildren or your grandparents. Refuse to leave the dead behind, but bring their memory to all the chores and games and corners of quiet, warm tears. Know always that joy and sorrow are woven together. One cannot be without the other. If you love, know that sometimes your love will bring you tears. If you grieve, know it is because at some time you were willing to love. For those of you who pray, please pray with me. Spirit of life, great mystery deep within our souls, hold us so that we may remember those who we have loved and we've thought about this morning. Those who we've cried with, those we have fought with, those we have laughed with. May our gratitude for their lives sparkle in our own lives. May our tears lubricate our soul. Help us to know that we are not alone in our grieving, and help us to come to that peaceful place in which we can take what we have learned from those who have gone before into our own lives. Remind us that we are ordinary saints for others, that we can be extraordinarily human, that we can beautify the world moment by moment, day by day, life by life. Also remind us that we too are mortal, that the only enduring legacy we will leave is the love that shines through our lives. May it be so. Amen.
Patrick has given us lots of things to think about, and it's time for comments or questions from you. Raise your hand. I'll try and get around to all of you.
My son was asking about the heroes. You mentioned there were two heroes. We didn't know the story behind them.
Oh, great. So in 1939, Frederick something Elliott, who was the president of the American Unitarian Association, called upon a Unitarian minister by the name of Waitstill Sharp. And he asked Waitstill and his Waitstill's wife, Martha, to go to Czechoslovakia and to work in terms of humanitarian relief and primarily in terms of trying to get people out of harm's way because the Nazis had invaded Czechoslovakia. That's what actually started World War II as we know it. So Waitstill and Martha did a lot of work. Actually, Martha, the wife of this couple, is the one who stayed on the ground and worked with the people while Waitstill went off to Paris and other places to raise money. They worked in Czechoslovakia area for a number of months. They spent time with Reverend Kapik, who later was himself killed by the Nazis. And then they returned home. They had done their work. They were heroes. They'd lived among the Nazis, and they had tricked them, and they'd all of these things. So a little bit of time goes by, and Elliot calls Waitsville Sharp back and says, hey, there's more problems in Europe. You need to go back. And Waitsville said, no, I don't think so. And Martha said, yeah, you got to be kidding. Well, Elliot, who I never met, but I understand was a fairly persuasive guy, and besides, he was the head of the denomination, and Waitsville's reverency might have been in his hands, finally prevailed, and off they went to Europe again. It's now, I believe, is 1940. They continue to do the work they're doing, and what they're attempting to do is get people out of particularly Eastern Europe as quickly as they can. They were looking at the scientists, the religious people, children. The stories of their heroism are absolutely unbelievable. The things that they did, and again, particularly the things that Martha did, looking straight into the eyes of SS agents and lying to them and doing the things that she needed to do. But a number of children and a number of other souls were saved by Martha Sharp and her husband Waitsville. So that's the story. There is a PBS special that was done by Ken Burns on the Sharps, and it's well worth a look.
Other questions?
This isn't a question, but after everybody was done going up and lighting the candle, I thought, I wish I had lit one for all the people who died so unnecessarily this year in the war, by police officers, by whatever the violence that we just seem to accept so readily.
Absolutely so. Other questions or comments?
I have a question of curiosity for the whole group. How many people experienced some kind of sense of visitation or awareness of a loved one who'd passed away, besides me?
It looks like about half the hands.
Thank you. That's a good question. Other comments?